This is 90.3 KEDM Public Radio. I'm Corey Crow. You're listening to Policy and a Pint, Homeless for the Holidays. And tonight we're discussing issues related to being homeless in our area. And I've got a room full of folks tonight at Militello's Sports City Grill in West Monroe. And we want to say thanks to them for letting us come out to their place this evening. With us, we've got folks from lots of different area organizations, but Billy Varner is a voice you've been hearing from the Desired Street Shelter. Billy, how big an area does the Desired Street Shelter serve? I mean, Monroe is like the metropolis around here, so are we getting folks from a wide area coming into Monroe that need services?
Yes. Monroe is located, I guess, well, it's a thoroughfare. I mean, it connects. You got Dallas, Shreveport, Monroe, and then you have Jackson and New Orleans. So we have a lot of individuals that are passing through that will come and stay 20, 30 days here, and then they'll move on. I've asked individuals why they choose Monroe is one of the questions that we ask, and they said that they feel safe. They don't feel as endangered as it is in Shreveport or your bigger cities like New Orleans. And as you said earlier, our community is a community, it's a service community. And they get a lot of the resources that they're seeking when they're here.
We were talking about money a minute ago. In the last segment, you told me $40,000, $45,000, $50,000. And then during the break, you said, oh, wait, it's more than that. You came up with more money.
No, actually, I was thinking in terms of when we were doing the overnighting shelter.
Okay.
It's actually less. When we were doing the overnight sheltering, we were averaging 20 to 25 individuals sometimes in hotel rooms. Now, since we're doing the day shelter, it's more in and around between 22 and 25,000.
Matt Villarreal with us from Cover the 318. You guys have been doing a social media push, and it's not expensive for somebody to get involved, right? You were telling me for just a little amount, you can help a person overnight. Your group, Cover the 318, is helping with the United Way. Tell me about what you guys have going on.
Yeah, so right now, like I said, mentioned earlier, we have a Facebook page and a website. It's actually, our website is coverthe318.com. I encourage everyone to go out there and check that out and then give us a like on Facebook. And, you know, we're really, really focused on people contributing as much as they can. And for as little as $12.50, you can give someone a meal when they arrive, a safe, warm place to sleep, and a meal the next day.
So $12.50.
Exactly. And while any donation is obviously awesome, I mean, it just shows you, it puts into perspective how much you can actually do with such little amount.
We're going to talk about how folks can get involved. You have a question for our members.
Yes, my name's Carol Tolliver, and I'm a previously homeless child and adult. First question I have is to Captain Jerry. What if an individual comes in without an ID? As Mr. Billy had said, most homeless people have no ID, no Social Security card. So when they arrive at a place, and I know this firsthand, and you can't get in anywhere, you're hopeless. You're totally hopeless. So what and how are y'all handling a situation like that? Are you rejecting them coming in immediately, or are they being allowed to come in? This question is for you and for Mr. Billy.
Great. Like I said, we instill hope, so that's not even an issue. They can come in without ID for one night. Now, sorry to say, but most of our vulnerable adults, is how I like to refer to them as, have been in a little bit of trouble. And most of the time, I can pull their picture on the internet through a website. And all I have to do, I just need to know that this face is this person's name. That's all. I have to keep everybody safe. As long as I can do that, and 90% of the time when they don't have ID, that's exactly what we do. It takes me a second, bam, you know, I'm checking for a sexual predator anyway, or a very violent crime. Either one of those two are not allowed in my shelter. But even if they don't, if they've never been in trouble before and they don't have ID, let's say they got robbed on the bus, whatever. It's not a problem. They can stay in for the night, and then the following day they go to the police station, they get themselves fingerprinted, they get an ID sheet, and they come back. Bada bing, bada boom. Piece of cake.
Billy, same question for you guys. What happens there?
Well, many of the individuals that come in don't, like I said, they don't have IDs. We actually are connected with the Homeless Information System, which is referred to as HMIS. We can take their Social Security number, go in, and oftentimes there are pictures there, or there's information there to where they have been possibly other places, in the area or other facilities, and we can pull that information off to verify it. Now, we do issue a shelter ID, and that's the way we actually, when they come in, they're scanned, and that's the way we track our services.
Captain Casey, a question for you. You mentioned that a lot of these folks need other help. You connect them with other organizations. Tell me about how you're involved with the Wellspring. What do they do with you guys?
Wellspring is an outstanding, outstanding organization. Wellspring comes in. They're the one who come in 3 days a week and do that casework for us. They take out, we bring them in off the street. They need an initial place to come in off the street. They come into us. We give them a safe place to come, clean themselves up, have a nice bed, put themselves together. Wellsprings comes to us. We don't even have to send them to Wellsprings. They come to us. They're tremendous. And then they assess them and they figure out what is the best route that we need to take with this particular individual. Now, if they have a straight up addiction problem, the Salvation Army has 27 rehabs around the country that we can place people in. It's not a problem. If it's a mental health issue, they go see the good doctor. If they need housing, permanent housing, transitional housing, whatever, they figure out how they can put them into housing and let them maintain their housing. I mean, like I said, it is a group effort with everyone. I can't do the housing part. You know what I mean? I can let them, they can come and stay with me, and they can stay with me as long as they want, till they can get themselves up on their feet. They can get a job, they can come in and out. Like I said, we reserve them a bed, we save them a hot meal. They can take a shower, it's safe, until we can move them forward. But Wellsprings, on a personal note, it's been a godsend for us.
Christy Hodges is with us from Wellspring. Christy, a lot of these folks that find themselves homeless, I mean, sometimes it's just a husband beating on a wife for the night and she needs to get out of a bad situation, or the other way around. Tell me about what happens and what you guys are seeing at the Wellspring and how you're helping with these other organizations.
Okay. Well, we do have, the Wellspring is known for their domestic violence and sexual assault services. And we do have shelter for domestic violence women and children and now men. So now anyone in a domestic violence situation can come to the Wellspring shelter and be in a safe place. And then they transfer them to our services, to our housing services, and we have housing services for anyone, be it domestic violence, any type of homelessness, men, women, children, veterans, mental illness, substance abuse, any of that.
I had a neighbor move in. I live in Monroe, and I went over and introduced myself, and she's like, "Don't tell anybody I'm here. I'm from Florida. And my husband's been beating me, and the Wellspring's hiding me out over here." And so she stayed there for a number of months till she got back on her feet. Sir, you have a question. Your name and your question.
My name's Kenneth McKenzie, and first of all, I want to thank you, the panel, for everything you do. I know that giving money is very important to your cause, but in addition to that, let's say someone has a lot of skills and ability and education, and they want to give of themselves. How can that person help and be part of the solution?
Well, go ahead. Our organization is primarily ran by volunteers. We do volunteers come in, they do parenting classes. They come in, they do life skills classes. We partner with the Children's Coalition. We partner with Wellspring. We partner with, as Captain Casey said, anyone that wants to be a part of, that's interested in helping. Many of the skills, one of the things that we do is we connect those individuals with area churches. And what that does is, within your own congregations, just think about the number of skills that are in those church services. And as you said, many people want to donate money at this time, and of course we need money. Many individuals around Thanksgiving and Christmas, they want to do dinners, they want to come volunteer to serve. But these individuals have to eat, they have to have places to stay 365 days a year. And believe it or not, relationships and coming down, fellowshipping with the individuals that we have there, that's the piece that's missing. And money can't replace love. Things can't replace love. So coming down, sharing of yourself, interacting with these individuals fosters hope.
I have a question. Dr. Sizer's here from the HSA, and many of these folks have been in a cycle for whatever reason. Maybe it's drugs, or they've been in trouble, or their, you know, husband or wife's kicking them out of the house, whatever it happens to be. Dr. Sizer, we were talking earlier about folks that are just getting out of prison. Talk to me about the prison folks, and you guys jump in here. You get out of prison and they go, hey, Corey, here's $20. Good luck on life. And they throw you out of jail. What happens to these folks? Do they end back up in the cycle of going back to prison or back into homelessness sometimes?
The answer is yes and yes. But we're trying to do something about that. We've created the LARE program, which is a prison reentry program that work with these men and women 6 to 9 months before they leave the prison, so that there's a specific treatment plan. There is identification sought. They know where their housing's going to be. We have inpatient and outpatient treatment already scheduled for those individuals. There is a case manager attached to them when they come out and while they're in. And so also the primary health care and the workforce development initiative that I talked to you called SOLS. And right now for the panel, we have 15 slots available to any man or woman at your facilities right now to get workforce development training. The other thing I want to say is that while we will not eliminate homelessness, but there's some things we can do if we plan and strategize. And so I'm looking within the next coming days for us to put a plan together to deal with the continuum of homelessness. From those individuals who initially need crisis services, those who need transitional, and those who need permanent placement. And so we can deal with the symptoms if we want to, or we can work around systemic issues to try to deal with the complexities that's causing it, and then work mutually together to come up with some other public policies and other types of resources to help mitigate the challenge. And so my challenge to all of us here is, it's good to do something in isolation, it's good to do some things somewhat in collaboration, but we got to do it structurally.
Do we have a good plan, guys? Do we ever all team up and have a big meeting and go, this is our plan as Monroe or North Louisiana? Does that happen?
Yeah, we all belong to the Homeless Coalition. We all belong to HMIS. We discuss these things, and we're figuring it out together.
We've got a question back here from the back of our room at Sports City Grill. Your name and your question.
My name is Larry Head, and I just came up with this great idea. I think $12.50 will fund a stay in a shelter for one night, right? One time. So if you do the math, I did the math. So if we can get like 16 people to pledge $25, then a month tonight, then we've funded the stay for one whole year. For one person. What do y'all think about that? Now, I just came up with the idea, but I happen to have the sign-up form with me. So my friend Al is going to walk around the room and ask you to sign up and sign a pledge. I've already put mine down. I'm doing $50, so, and that's a month. So if everybody would consider some, I know everybody in here can do $12.50, or if you can't do $12.50, do something else. But
all right, so we've got folks in the room who are going to do that. We have a radio audience who's listening. they may not know how to get involved. We only got 2 minutes left. We'll start with Matt Villarreal. Matt, folks, our gentleman over here said throwing money at the problem sometimes helps, but other people have skills. But let's throw some money at the problem, too, tonight. How do they give you money?
So, tonight we obviously heard from our panelists that these places, these shelters and the services that they're providing are expensive to operate. And it's important that people, are donating and regularly donating to these issues. So Cover the 318 really believes in an easy way for our community to give back and help fund these shelters and the services that they need. And especially with the temperatures dropping this winter season, I mean, it's even more important that these people have a place to go. And actually, Monroe is the largest city in Northeast Louisiana that provides these services.
What's the web page?
Yeah, where do I give the money? Where do I go on the internet?
www.coverthe318.com.
All right. Captain Casey, a couple of quick final comments, and how do folks get involved with the local Salvation Army?
They can come by. Volunteerism is how we survive. They're really, in my place, I have 2 full-time employees, and I'm one of them. So running a social service department, a human resource department, a shelter system, a family store, we need help. So anybody who wants to come by and volunteer just to answer phones would be fantastic. 105 Hart Street. We're right on that. We share a wall with the restaurant, the kitchen. Everybody knows the kitchen. We share a wall with them, and we're right next to the bus depot.
Right down by near the Monroe Civic Center, if you don't know where they are, right downtown. And Billy Varner, Desired Street Shelter. How do folks get involved, give you money, donate time, that sort of thing?
We'd ask that you would go to our website, desiredstreetshelter.org. And there are several ways that you can donate, PayPal, or you can come by the shelter at 807 Desert Street. And we, too, accept volunteers. But I encourage each and every one of you all, if you want the experience, come to where the guests are.
That's Billy Varner with the Desired Street Shelter. I want to thank all of our panelists tonight for KEDM's Policy in a Pint. Now, for our radio audience, if you missed something, this is all available on our website at kedm.org. If you want to get involved with any of these local groups or even some of the groups you heard questions from in our audience tonight, we'll have a complete listing of how to get involved on our website at kedm.org. I'm Corey Crow. Thank you for listening to Policy in a Pint. Once again, thanks to Militello Sports City Grill for hosting us tonight. And you can continue to listen and find out more at kedm.org.